This is Broadway to Brazil, the only podcast to tell the remarkable story of Corinthians Casuals FC, the English non-league club who are big in Brazil. Supposedly a week is a long time in politics. Well, you should try 10 days in non-league football. In May 2018, the Corinthians Casuals' third campaign under manager James Bracken reached its climax. We at Broadway to Brazil had been there from the start, from the first pre-season friendlies in August to the final games in spring. We immersed ourselves in every facet of this fascinating club. By season's end, we were firmly embedded, perhaps to the extent that our journalistic impartiality had been a little compromised.
Woke up this morning, feeling fine. Got Corinthians Casuals on my mind. They play football the way.
Over the course of this episode, we'll be telling you just how immersed I became as the chocolate and pink pursued that elusive promotion. Would 3 years of toil be rewarded with a place in the seventh tier of England's football pyramid? Or would there be further heartbreak after the club's last two seasons of points deduction and penalty shootout misery?
That's the biggest change of emotion I've had during a game. And I've said this to a couple of people after the game. That's the first time I've not been in control of my reaction or my emotions after the game.
Nothing straightforward at Corinthians Casuals as we've seen in the last 3 years with James and stuff. Something's always happened towards the end of the season to make it excitable, and yeah, this year's no different.
We have to go back to the drawing board. There's no two ways about it. We're not going to roll over. We're not going to give up. We're going to keep fighting. There's an extremely talented group of players in there, and there's an extremely hard group of working staff behind them.
There'll be ups and downs and no shortage of drama in this thrilling climax, complete with last-minute goals, injury woes, a police appearance, and an unexpected trip to a small village in the UK that this host had never heard of before.
John, where are we and why?
You may well ask. I can't even tell you what I was thinking. Yeah. I can't tell you what emotion I was feeling. I don't know.
It's late in May, and I'm waiting on Platform C of Waterloo East, about to board a train to Sandling, a tiny hamlet in Kent, around 60-odd miles southeast of London. There's no Sandling FC, but it is the station of closest proximity to Hythe Town Football Club, promotion rivals to the Corinthians Casuals. Ahead of this match, the final game of the regular season, the clubs are in a straightforward standoff for a playoff place. Although they had spent most of the season competing in the top four, Casuals' form had dropped of late, and they needed a result on the final day to ensure a top six place. Draw or win at Hythe, a playoff place was assured. Lose, and there was a strong likelihood a rival would displace them. Eager to learn more about the club's consistently vocal supporters, I decided to join some of the Corinthians Casuals' most loyal followers for this most crucial of matches. A group of around 10 of us have boarded the carriage, which we have all to ourselves. A fortunate turn of events, considering how the volume and general boisterousness crank up over the course of the journey. The group is divided into two subgroups. The older gents coalesce around one table, and I join four younger lads, eager to learn more about why they invest so much time and energy into this club.
Here at Corinthians Casual, it's all about pride and passion of the game. They play because they love the game.
That's the voice of Jack Smith, perhaps the most prominent of those you'll hear from this youthful group. A man so keen on casuals, he puts episodes of Broadway to Brazil on when he goes to sleep.
Yeah. These podcasts are good though. It's good to listen to, like, because when I'm trying to get to sleep, like, I'm not saying it's going to bore me.
It's like I've got a soothing voice.
Yeah, no, but it's like when I'm trying to get to sleep, if I've got work early in the morning, it's like nice to listen to before because I could just listen about casuals, drift off, talk about casuals.
Nice,
no, good. You know what I mean?
Also with us is Dan Harris, who doubles up as a club volunteer, offering his services for home games as both steward and assistant to groundsman Brian Adamson. Coming away day, Dan's responsibilities lie with corralling his fellow supporters together and getting behind the team. The group also contains a quieter character known as Titch, a recent convert to the Pink and Brown, and the youngest of them all, 18-year-old Billy Stringer. Billy is a fan, a regular home and away, as obsessive over the fates and fortunes of the first team as any of the others, and often the first to sing his heart out from the pitch side. But he's also familiar with representing the club from the other side of the white line, having played in the youth team since he was 9 and capturing the under-19s up until this year. While on the train, Jack confides to Billy his dreams of seeing his best friend score for the first team.
I'm crying of proudness because that would be my best friend scoring.
Billy's history with the club is absolute. He relays to me how his father, Roger, one of the older gentlemen who's also on the train with us, used to take Billy to Corinthian Casual's home games far before he was old enough to comprehend his surroundings. The extraordinary thing about this story is that this man and boy were often the only ones there. We've spoken about how this club's illustrious history stretches back to the old Corinthian FC being one of the biggest teams of the Victorian era, but this counted for little a century later, in the midst of what could now be viewed as the club's doldrums. While the move to Tolworth was critical in securing the club's future, performances on the field at the time were often uninspiring, and the team struggled to attract support beyond their very immediate neighbours. Billy and Roger recall being the only fans supporting the team from behind the goal. It's remarkable to think that a club of such rich and proud tradition, one that played such a noble historical role in developing the game across the globe, could be reduced to quite such a small fan base. Billy's connection to the club never waned, whether as a fan, a player, or, much to the hilarity of his friends, a particularly oversized matchday mascot. As Billy grew up, his dad drummed up interest among his friends, slowly building up a network of fans that today occupy a matchday place behind whichever goal the Corinthian Casuals are shooting towards. With the club now averaging a healthier matchday attendance closer to the 200 mark, Roger Stringer has over time adopted something of an ambassadorial supporter role, selling the club to passers-by or one-time visitors and developing connections with strangely far-flung places in the UK.
5 years ago, we were going to watch North End at Crawley Town. Game was called off half an hour before the game. What do you do? 300 miles away from home or 250 miles away from home? Find a game that's on.
It was Roger who first greeted Ben Astley and a group of Preston North End supporters as they randomly found themselves at a casuals away game, having seen their own side's fixture in the area postponed.
So we picked a game nearby, gets on the game, as you do, have a few beers, quite a few Preston fans, probably about 30 or so there.
Right.
But we, as you say, watch the game, get talking to a few Corinthian casuals fans, as you do, watch the game. I think Casuals won 2-1 that night, so a bit of a link started, and it's kind of carried on one, you know, conversation on the internet, and so on and so forth. Kept in touch with the likes of Roger and stuff like that, and then this season we've kind of started, right, we're going to plan a game. We're North End International Weekend, haven't got a game, we'll come down, watch Corinthian Casuals, started a Facebook page.
Ben helps to run the Northern Corinthian Casuals Facebook group, the digital meeting place of these Lancastrian appreciators of the chocolate and pink. I met him and his group at King George's Field for a casuals home game. They had boarded the first train out of Preston at 6:57 that morning to make the 3 p.m. kickoff.
So there must have been something that struck a chord with you about the casuals.
Yeah, it's the affinity to history, I think.
Right, because Preston are obviously one of the oldest.
We're one of the, you know, we've got our own history in terms of, you know, oldest, won the double, won the, you know, one of the founder members of the Football League. So we can kind of get into your history as well.
Yeah.
Because it's of a similar ilk, albeit from an amateur perspective. So we can buy into that in terms of, we know where you're from, your background, and we've got a bit of a background, so we understand that our history matters to a supporter.
Sure.
Albeit at a lower level, you know, a lower non-league level.
Sure.
So we can buy into that.
Similarly, there's a fan group in Airdrie, 300 miles north of Tolworth in North Lanarkshire, Scotland, who've also made the trip to King George's in the past. The north of the border casuals are also a result of Roger Stringer's devoted marketing of the club to his own personal connections. In contrast to those lonely days in the 80s and early 90s, there's now an eminent sense of growth at the club. Aided by impressive on-field performances, week on week, each attendance seems to eclipse the last, as I discussed with both of the Stringers.
So you've seen the support grow quite a bit then, presumably?
Oh, massively, over the last couple of years. Massively.
Years,
just me. Just me.
Lad was telling me it went from just you to you two.
He was in a pram. I also got a bottle of stir underneath him. For years, I used to get in and they used to let me in for nothing.
See the support grow from just being the old man. Three of us to four of us away in the freezing cold, three bridges away, for example. The amount of people that we've gained throughout, you've got to think about the Airdrie boys from Scotland, the Preston North
Preston
End
boys. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. All over England and Scotland, you should say. It's amazing just for a small club just off the slip road of the A3.
And we are the unique club because we ain't named like a town. Anyone can support us. Anyone. People come from what? We are English football's forgotten giants, and the local people, to us, we are the biggest secret.
As Roger alludes to, despite this growth, a lot more progress could still be made in raising awareness in the local area. One thing certain to result in a spike in interest would be the casuals playing in the next league up. In the 17-18 season, when this documentary was recorded, the Bostic Premier Division contained a number of big names in non-league terms. Billericay Town, led by eccentric businessman Glenn Tamplin, an owner and manager forking out wages for former Premier League players. Dulwich Hamlet, another famous old club whose attendances had recently skyrocketed as a result of some incredibly effective local marketing. And casuals' very own neighbours and future tenants of King George's Field, Kingstonian FC. Such fixtures potentially coming to Tolworth was a mouth-watering prospect for Roger, Billy and the rest of the Behind the Goal group. The entire promotion campaign had an air of fairy tale about it. Could this small, unpaid fish really be about to swim in the big money pond? I wanted to learn more about what it meant to be a supporter in recent times. But first, I asked if the recent drop-off in form, which had led to the automatic promotion dream fading into the distance, represented a letdown.
You guys disappointed those playoffs again, though? Because it looked
you can never be disappointed. Realistically, for a club who don't pay their players, we're looking at relegation.
We should be. In the modern day football, we should not be in this league.
Yeah. So what James Brecken has done in the past 3 years, nothing short of magnificent. Yeah, nothing short of it.
What is it, Jack?
Magnificent. It's magnificent.
While in transit, the boys make a quick phone call to a friend of theirs to sing him happy birthday. The recipient, Matt Dilger, who also happens to be the first team's video analyst. Someone who views casuals matches from several feet in the air as he records the action, so that he and James can later sit down and analyse the team's performances. I'll spare you the vocal talents of the Corinthian casuals Behind the Goal group, but the friendly call highlights the eminent bond between fans and first team that make non-league football such an appealing proposition for so many supporters.
It's not like we just come here to watch and play. We come here, if the player's injured, they'll come behind the goal and talk to us.
Yeah, it's great.
There's that connection between players and fans that makes
it. It's one big family, right?
Them lot love us as well.
A stark contrast to the Premier League experience, where fans can only dream of meeting players often shielded from the public glare. Here they are discussing Jamie Byatt, the club's all-time appearance holder, someone Roger Stringer places on a pedestal higher than the sport's elite.
He's a hero.
He's the hero to the club.
Ask Roger who his favourite player is.
He should be a Marvel film.
He'll tell you it is.
James Byatt should be in a Marvel film. He'll be
in the world. Ever footballer.
Whole wide world.
In the whole world.
Better than Messi, better than anyone.
Fair enough.
Do you know why? Because he does it for nothing. He does it for the love of the game.
And he drives a moped to training.
Reciprocating this appreciation, Jamie Byatt, who has amassed 355 casuals appearances and scored 121 goals over the past 15 years, has been around long enough to recognise the key role that Roger has played in expanding the club's support.
Obviously, I've played here a long time. I remember when it was just bloody probably about two people behind the goal, and that was probably
Roger and his kid.
And that was probably Roger and his boy. You know, so it's good to see like loads of people, new people coming, and that it's good. You know, Roger's made that behind the goal. All them supporters, you know, a lot of credit's got to go to Roger there. You know, he's been here a long time. He used to support it when it was just him and his boy, and he's just made it build up, and then, you know, word get about, and if you're doing well, you know, you get more people through the gates. So, yeah, it's good.
This appreciation of the fans is an idea emphatically backed up by other players. From forwards Hamilton, Antonio and Josh Uzen.
The support you get when you travel home and away is
crazy. It's crazy. Most of the players on the other team always mention the fans to us.
Really?
Yeah, like we appreciate it. We talk about the fans all the time. Like we're in the changing room, we're like, we talk about them all the time. But even the other teams always acknowledge, they're like, bro, that's a big turnout. Like they travel all the time, yeah, they always travel. Like even when they get on the coach with us, we love it. It's just a good environment. They're good to us, we're good to them. Just show results for them.
The fans behind the goal every single week are 100%. They are the 12th man, and they don't stop singing. Mm. And that's a big part as well. Mm. They're definitely the best fans in non-league easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Home and away, they're always there. It does mean a lot to us.
It means there's a good atmosphere around the club
does,
as
yeah.
well, don't they?
It does. They want us to win. Genuinely want us to win. So,
to club captain and goalkeeper Danny Bracken.
They always support the team, no matter whether you win or lose it. They always support the team and always sang throughout the 90 minutes. I always stayed basically because the fans supported the team the way that I wanted to be supported. So it's a major reason for why I'm here and at the club.
Danny, at this stage of the season, had sadly been reduced to the role of spectator, having suffered a broken leg in a match away at nearby promotion rivals Walton Casuals. Seeking a replacement, the Casuals turned to Gareth Williams, a player who last appeared for the club when he was roughly half his current age, some 17 years previous. Gareth is also the brother of kitman John Williams. One of the more curious aspects of the Corinthian Casuals is their fact that their goalkeepers all seem to be related to someone already on the staff. Anyway, at Hythe, Danny and his fellow injured teammate Troskan Ekim were sat among the fans cheering the team on. And proving the point of how comfortable they and the fans are in each other's company, we were interrupted by a certain Jack Smith.
But I've noticed with you, Danny, like, obviously since your injury, you've been spending a lot of time behind the goal with the fans. I mean, is it important to you to sort of show that support in that way?
Yeah, I think we're kind of all at one as a club. Like, even when players aren't involved in the squad or they're injured, they'll still come and watch and support the lads. And I think, like, we're kind of all in this together. I think some teams, if they're not picking up their £300 a week and they're not involved, they won't be anywhere near the ground. They'll be off doing something else.
Yeah.
Whereas we want to be here because we enjoy each other's company and it's good to be at the club.
Yeah.
But Ekin's been at other clubs where it may have been different. So.
Yeah, I've been at other clubs where, I mean, you're not in a matchday squad or you know, if you're injured or whatever, you wouldn't bother turning up. You might turn up, have a bit of physio and go home.
Non-league fans can be a little bit fickle sometimes. They can think their team's the best team. You're right. They can often...
We're talking about how much he loves the fans. Like, yeah.
That's it.
We're one of a kind.
Well, that's all summed up. That's it.
Despite the fact that these player-fan chats routinely occur before and after each match, and despite the fact that they're friends with each other on social media, and despite the total absence of barriers between the two, it's striking how the Casuals players remain deified and appreciated as heroes. But could the names of these heroes be etched into Corinthian Casuals legend through the crowning achievement of promotion? Coming up on Broadway to Brazil, we'll be telling you just what happened at Hythe. But first, there's some new kids on the block. We now know all about the Behind the Goal group, but who are these new guys singing about chips? We arrived at Hythe's Reachfield Stadium with plenty of time to spare. Unlike other games that the boys had spoken about, they were this time far from the only Corinthian Casuals representation here today. Testament to the expanding nature of the fan base. As the Behind the Goal crew set up camp, well, behind the goal, other supporter factions started to file in. There were the elder statesmen of the club. These are the gentlemen who have held long-standing sporting associations with the Casuals, with the former players, coaches or ground staff, and are perhaps those most concerned with the club retaining its Corinthian values of amateur sportsmanship and fair play. And then there is the newest group of fans, a set of individuals recruited to the Casuals fan base just this year.
So I'm Robin Hutchinson, and my connection is this season.
Robin is a personal friend of mine, and like me, had been introduced to the club through club committee member John Forrest, who we spent some time with in our last episode. If Roger Stringer can be called the source and inspiration for the Behind the Goal network, then John is the equivalent for Torcida Seething, a set of supporters centred around neighbouring Surbiton. Robin explained to me how supporting the Casuals came with an appealing social element.
It's been joyful because so many friends have come along to watch and continue to come and watch. And again, what's that all about? I think it's in part the joy of sharing anything with friends is rich. But actually, when you're supporting something that you understand why it's important for a club like this to survive, you get into it. And I think the Torcida Seething is this beautiful, beautiful sense of a group of people who are collegiate in their support for this club.
Torcida, by the way, is a reference to the club's Brazilian link. In Brazil, all major clubs have Torcida Organizadas, separate fan factions who engage in friendly rivalry with one another in their support for the team. This Torcida's matchday appreciation of the Casuals tends to manifest itself in the form of surrealistic references and humorous chanting. They, and Robin in particular, are the ones responsible for the vocal appreciation of a favourite Casuals canteen item.
We got four cheeses on our chips, we got four cheeses. On our chips, we got the league's best cheesy chips.
This had led Jack and his buddies to start referring to these supporters variously as the Cheesy Chips fans, the Cheesy Chips crew, or the Cheesy Chips group. Over the season, I divided my matchday time between the Torcida and behind the goal. A few things struck me. Regardless of clear cultural differences in both personal background and the varying ways in which they exhibit support for the team, the two groups' respect for one another grew exponentially. Also noticeable was the fact that the Torcida was home to many that I shared personal relationships with, but who had never before expressed to me any appreciation for football. Whatever it may be, in Corinthian Casuals, they found something special about the game that they could relate to and enjoy. Meanwhile, the lads behind the goal are very appreciative that another faction has taken it upon themselves to generate some atmosphere through the medium of song.
Well, I was going to ask you about how the fan base has grown. And, you know, you welcome the Cheesy Chips crew, presumably, as
anyone that's fan, they welcome us, though.
Do you know? Yeah. We're a Casuals fan that's been around for as long as well. Like, we've never had two sides of the ground singing at the same time.
Right, yeah.
To hear, like, obviously, the Cheesy Chips side sing along with us behind the car as well.
The appreciation of this heightened matchday atmosphere shared across the club. Chairman Brian Vanderbilt.
And they bring a lovely atmosphere to it, and it's so good to see the addition. We seem to be growing with spectators. Every home game now, there are new faces, and they're full of enthusiasm, and they have scarves, and they're mature adults of some age, and they're caught up in it, and it illustrates, as I've said, what a wonderfully special club we are.
Manager James Bracken.
Have you noticed that the fan base grown here at the club?
100%.
The new factions and 100%. Whatever else? 100%.
And I love the fact we've got different factions, and I love the fact they all get on. They all support the team in the right way.
Yeah.
Whether it be the Cheesy Chips gang, do you know what I mean? Singing their crazy football songs. But listen, they get behind us.
Yeah.
The boys behind the goal get behind us. The older generation here that love this football club. And that are just overjoyed at the success that we've brought them in the last 3 years. You know, they're used to losing 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 games. Now they're used to winning 7 or 8 out of 10 games. Everybody here is vitally important. Everybody here is respected and appreciated by myself and the players.
And matchday photographer and programme designer Stuart Tree.
And what's great is when both sets of fans start singing, mm-hmm. and you've got this reverberation of noise coming from different parts of the ground. And when we played Lewis, there were three sides of the ground that were singing all at different times, and it felt surreal. That was at King George's Arena. Before, it would be normally a polite applause or something. Now it sounds like a real football match.
Speaking of real football matches, it's time for some matchday reporting. Coming up, we reveal just what happened at Hythe and all that followed over a rollercoaster few days. Well, the truth is that for 80 minutes or so, the Hythe match can largely be glossed over. Chances were at a premium, and despite the fact that Hythe needed a goal themselves, the whole affair seemed to be defined by a fear of conceding. And unfortunately, with 10 minutes to go, the Casuals did just that.
Oh, no! Oh, no!
still just about in it.
So, you know, when they scored the goal, it was, it comes almost a shock to me. I couldn't see them scoring. I thought we had it so right. I thought everyone was doing it. I thought we were bang on. You know, they had four shots in the game, none from inside our box. Gareth made two saves. So, you know, that tells you a story of the game.
At 1-0 down, the casuals were now relying on another result going their way. And Ashford United were not granting them the favour that they desired, losing at home to the Walton Casuals. This meant that the table as it stood had Corinthian Casuals in 7th place, one place outside of the playoffs. With the announcement of 6 minutes stoppage time, the Casuals' season was about to fizzle out in the most disappointing of manners. And then, a free kick is launched from deep. Captain Nathan Daly, wearing the armband in the absence of injured Danny Bracken, gets ahead to the ball, and seemingly out of nowhere, striker Harry Ottaway finds himself 5 yards from an open goal with a ball floating towards him.
Go on! Nathan obviously got it back across goal. I didn't really know too much about it, to tell you the truth. I just headed it in the direction that I wanted to get it in. And then, because I sort of went past the goal, I thought I'd hit the side netting. And I heard everyone roar. I looked around at the linesman, and I wasn't off. And I just thought, wow. So, because I knew we needed a point minimum. So, yeah, it was brilliant. It was a great feeling.
Like I said, that's the biggest change of emotion I've had during a game. And I said this to a couple of people after the game. That's the first time I've not been in control of my reaction or my emotions after the game. My initial emotion, it was just, do you know what I mean? It was just, it all come out, it's a roar. I could have been anywhere, I didn't care. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what I did.
It was a stunning moment, the precise reason why we love the game. An outpouring of pure emotion, jubilation among players, staff and close to 100 away fans, from those behind the goal to the Torcida who had set up camp at its nearest corner. Ottaway's goal meant that the Casuals had scraped into 5th position by the skin of their teeth. In non-league football, playoff games tend to be one-legged, meaning that the higher-placed team in the table gets home advantage. 3rd hosts 6th and 5th travel to 4th, meaning that Corinthian Casuals were to play away at Greenwich Borough, an exact repeat of the precise same fixture last season. I'd already heard that last year's 4-3 victory, in which Casuals played a majority of the game with 10 men, was one of the most thrilling games of football you're ever likely to see, and I'd asked the lads on the way to Hythe about their memories of that night.
You lads at the playoffs last year?
Yeah. Greenwich last year. Oh my god, that was
an awesome. 4-3, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, 4-2. 4-2. 10 men, 70 minutes. They're the nights you live for football, Greenwich away. That was the night you live for football.
But as it turned out, this year's Greenwich trip was significantly less tense or dramatic. As Torcida Seething and Behind the Goal merged to form one large Behind the Goal group, to our delighted surprise, the Casuals in the first half scored not just once, but twice. Goals coming via a Josh Hughes penalty and Gabriel Odonike. The Casuals cruised to a thoroughly emphatic and professional 3-0 victory. Greenwich was surreal in its simplicity. With vocal celebrations well underway from the 50th minute onwards, many of us didn't even notice an opposition player being sent off deep into injury time. I was chatting to stadium announcer Richard Green around this time, who reflected on the differences between this year's and last year's respective Greenwich semis.
Last year, when we won here, it was like we'd achieved something. Yeah, great, we're in the final, whatever. I think tonight it's going to be more a case of that's half the job done. I sure think you've seen the euphoria at the end of this game as there was last year, because we're halfway there.
When the Casuals players did their customary greeting of fans following the full-time whistle, it was noticeable that one more to go was very much the stock phrase offered to supporters, rather than anything along the lines of we've done it. James Bracken echoed this sentiment. Winning the semi-final did not constitute a completed achievement in itself.
It wasn't delirium. Certainly from our point of view, it was job done. Next one's the most important one.
And so the Corinthian Casuals were, for the second year running, in the playoff final. Just a quick reminder of how 2017's occasion went.
So you were at Dorking last year as well, right?
Oh, yeah, that brings back.
Oh, Dorking, that was so upsetting. I still feel
how that felt after losing that game.
It broke my heart. I couldn't talk to people for a few days.
it's not just losing the player fight, it's like absolutely dominating the match at the same time.
It's dominating the match and not coming away with anything.
Yeah. On penalty shootout the whole season, it can't get much worse.
Although this year's victory over Greenwich may have been surprising in its straightforward nature, nobody was shocked to see the side perform so strongly. The biggest surprise occurred in the other semi-final. Sixth place Bolton Casuals put third place Cray Wanderers to the sword. A 5-2 victory away from home, which meant an all-casuals final. And with Corinthian Casuals having finished above Walton in the regular season, it was to be King George's Field that would have the privilege of hosting the final, taking place just 4 days after the semi. A message from John Forrest to our WhatsApp Broadway to Brazil production group arrived the following day. OMG, the chaos of organising a cup final with 3 days' notice, crying with laughter emoji. Let's not forget that this club operates exclusively through unpaid volunteers, most of whom have no shortage of work commitments outside of the game. No one had expected the final to be fifth place versus sixth place, and so little planning was made for a home game, which was expected to draw in around 1,000 people, roughly five times the casual's usual attendance. To get a sense of the madness, I had a chat on the day with Hannah Newton. As club secretary, Hannah is responsible for the club's governance and legal responsibilities.
So tell me what it involves from a day like today and having only, three days preparation for it, essentially?
Yeah, basically from Wednesday morning. It entails a vast amount of paperwork, huge amount of organisation. We've got great volunteers at this club. It's a proper family club, or family of a club. And we've been working on an interactive spreadsheet that has just grown and grown and grown, and people have just taken ownership. I've set it all out, built the structure, and people have padded it out, which has been amazing. We're looking at the well-being of well over 1,000 people instead of our normal 200 or 300.
Yeah, exactly. So that involves more food, more drink capacity,
absolutely,
more toilets.
Facilities and logistics. You've just got to think on your feet, plan. And most things are booked up. By the time you know about these games, this is a big weekend for events. So most things are pre-booked. So we just pulled out all the stops and got extra of absolutely everything. We even have an extra boardroom.
Pleasingly, all the newly invited food traders were up and running. A cask of locally produced craft ale had been generously donated to the clubhouse by the Lamb Pub down the road, and portaloos in all four corners of the ground were operational. The expected 1,000 people arrived, the regular numbers boosted by a combination of curious locals, non-league aficionados, and a sizeable contingent of Walton Casual supporters. Come 3 p.m, we were ready to turn our attention to the match itself. Except, once again, there really isn't a whole lot to say about the match itself. Or at least, not what happened over 90 minutes of regular time and then another 30 minutes of extra time. There was a second half wave of the linesman's flag that killed off premature home team celebrations, and an agonisingly close miss from Harry Ottaway in extra time.
Go on, go on, go on, go on!
Otherwise, the game was goalless and largely eventless. Both casuals equipped themselves well, with a match generally dictated by a low tempo, a natural consequence of an oppressively hot day. The referee's whistle signalled the playoff final would go to a penalty shootout, just like last year's. With a sizeable element of both sets of fans having been drinking in the sun all day, the alcohol-fuelled atmosphere was about to turn unsavoury.
First penalty to Walton Casuals.
There were no mistakes from the first two penalty takers, and the score was 1-1 with four penalties left each. At this point, with the penalty shootout taking place at one end of the pitch, the referee's whistle had sparked a mass movement of Walton Casuals fans from their end of the ground to the one populated by home supporters. The sets of fans were side by side, and with the two initial penalties successfully dispatched, chants were exchanged, something I mistook as good-natured.
Right in the crossfire of Walton and Corinthian Casuals chanting right now.
My tone soon changed.
You did!
Get out, boy!
With my back towards the crowd, I couldn't tell exactly how it started, but the pushes and shoving depressingly descended into 10 to 20 grown men, engaging it could only be described as a brawl, as players urged their supporters to calm down. Well, not exactly the LA riots, the scenes were nevertheless still the antithesis of the Corinthian spirit, and totally unlike anything we'd previously witnessed at the club. The game was delayed while stewards and police restored order, and when the sides returned, it was the Corinthian Casuals players who seemed most affected by what had happened, at least judging from the quality of their penalty kicks. Gabriel Odonike and Fraser Walker missed, while the Walton players were flawless, running out 4-2 winners. Walton were promoted. The Corinthian Casuals were, for the third season running under James Bracken, cruelly denied promotion to the Bostic Premier.
It was the first time ever I've sat in a game, in a change room after a game when everyone had gone home for 20 minutes with enemy hands.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what emotion I was feeling. I don't know. But I sat there and I looked at the time, I've been sitting here for 20 minutes. I better scoot off because I can't spend my life here.
There was to be no promotion, no end of season party. Corinthian Casuals were staying in the Bostic South. Or were they? Perhaps by now, you've picked up on the fact that we've graduated from intrigued observers to dyed-in-the-wool supporters. We've been compelled by the story we've told, enamoured with a local club that we previously had little knowledge of, made a great number of friends who have shown nothing but generosity and kindness as we go around forcing microphones in their faces. And for me personally, I've rediscovered a childlike enthusiasm for the game of football, enhanced by the experience of watching games in the company of good friends and the personal connection to the players and management of a steadfastly amateur club who have impressed me so much. From my own point of view, it wouldn't really matter what division the club played in. In truth, the opponents are usually pretty irrelevant to the experience of supporting the team. But from both a personal and journalistic perspective, what I really wanted to see was James Bracken roaring in unbridled celebration, John Forrest joyfully waving his flags on pitch side as the Torcida erupted, Roger, Billy, Jack and the lads behind the goal living the dream that they had replayed in their minds on repeat. My gut feeling after the Walton game was that this experience had been robbed from me. Which may explain why 2 days later, I unusually found myself here.
John, where are we and why?
You may well ask. We are at Hartley Whitney FC, Hartley Whitney, I should say,
yeah.
In lovely leafy Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And this is the Southern League Tier 2 playoff.
In episode 3, we referred to the minefield of non-league football administration, costing the Casuals a playoff place 2 years previously. By 2018, however, the mines had apparently been cleared and replaced with rewards. Allow me to explain in the simplest possible terms. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Due to the regrettable resignation of Thurrock United from the Bostic Premier League in March, an extra place had been made available in the league system. A decision was made to award an extra promotion spot to the losing playoff finalist who had the highest points per game average, or PPG, over the course of the season. Going into the various finals, Corinthian Casuals had a lower PPG than Haringey United and Hartley Whitney FC, meaning that Casuals needed those two sides to win their respective finals against sides who had a lower PPG than themselves. The day after the Walton penalty shootout defeat, Haringey United defeated Canvey Island 3-1, ensuring that it all came down to Hartley Whitney versus Cambridge City. Is that clear? Well, not for me either. But the point is that if this little-known Hartley Whitney FC side in Hampshire won their playoff, then the Corinthian Casuals would be promoted as the best-performing, highest-ranked losing playoff finalist. Not exactly the manner that the likes of James Bracken, his staff or the supporters would have dreamed about, but after the Walton heartbreak, we'd definitely take it. And so it was that I joined John Forrest, who had been by my side for so much of the season's action, for that one-hour drive, and confused the local supporters by wearing our Corinthian Casuals scarves for a game that featured two teams we knew nothing about and whose fans knew little about us.
Have you been in a situation like this in football before?
No.
Coming along supporting a team that 24 hours ago you probably hadn't even heard of?
Not quite. No, I think all of us as football fans at times have cheered for a team that we have no affiliation with because they are playing a rival for promotion or relegation. But I've never been in a situation like this. I'm not sure that a situation like this has really quite happened before. But we'll make the most of it. It's a lovely day. There's an outside chance we get promoted, and if not, we're no worse off than we were on Saturday afternoon.
And it's been an absolute rollercoaster for 10 days or so, hasn't it? Going back to Hive, Greenwich, then the scenes on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
The heartbreak of losing the second penalty shootout of the year, and then this random hope that's been tossed our way.
No, we were also licking our wounds after Saturday. It really hurt, you know, to have played as well as we did, but then, as you say, to go to another penalty shootout and to lose that 2 years in a row, that's really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
On the Sunday, we're all just thinking, all right, the season's over, not much we can do about it, let's get on with the summer. And then this occurred, where we realised that there was an opportunity when Haringey won that we were still in with a shout. So now it's a bit like somebody ripping off a bandage rather roughly to see if the wound's still open, and it is.
It should be noted that we were there in hope rather than expectation. Cambridge City had dished out resounding beatings to Hartley Whitney on two separate occasions during the regular season. Perhaps this is why a few other casual supporters joined us, and the gaffer also decided to give it a miss.
You know, I wasn't at the game, couldn't influence the game. Whatever was going to be was going to be. Yeah. Fate was going to play its course.
Yeah.
You know, the Haringey game obviously went the way it did.
Yeah.
And I was aware of it. And on the Monday, I went to Hampton. I went to lunch on the river. It was a very nice day with me and the other half. We went home. We had a barbecue in the garden. Funnily enough, John Williams, one of our staff members, the kit man, went to watch the game.
Yes, while me and John Forrest provided supporter representation, kit man John Williams was there on behalf of the coaching staff. It was an odd moment to reflect upon. 10 months of following the fortunes of a football club had led me here, stood next to the kit man and the guy who sells the merch and grates the cheese, nervously watching 22 players we knew nothing about compete for a playoff title we previously had no interest in, all in a highly endearing village setting situated in a gloriously green part of the country that I otherwise would never have visited. So, what happened? Well, there was a first half goal, pleasingly scored for the home team. One of the stranger aspects of the day was that Hartley Whitney themselves weren't actually certain if they needed to win or not. Everyone was still waiting official confirmation. As a result, the home crowd were as nervous as we were, as Cambridge City laid siege to the Hartley Whitney goal.
Oh! Jesus. Why did we do this to ourselves?
Oh! Jesus.
John the kit man wanted his colleagues to share in the gut-wrenching tension.
And then I started to get a few updates within the group, the management group. And obviously when it sort of gets half-time, an hour, 75, and then you're in the position where if it stays like it is, you're going to go up.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yes! Yes!
Welcome to the next season, guys.
Full time, 1-0 to Hartley Whitney. They were promoted, and as a result, so were the Corinthian Casuals.
We think congratulations in order. We think Corinthian Casuals are promoted as it stands right now.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling?
Yeah, a bit weird at the moment. It's a bit sort of subdued, but like I say, until you get official confirmation, you don't want to get too excited by it all. But at the moment, it seems like we are going up. It's a bit of a surreal feeling.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, nothing straightforward at Corinthian Casuals, as you've seen in the last 3 years with James and stuff. Something's always happened towards the end of the season to make it excitable, and
yeah,
this year's no different.
Manager James Bracken again.
And obviously when I got the message full-time, Hartley won 1-0, and you think, we've done it. I didn't feel a lot. I just felt maybe more clear in my thinking moving forward. Maybe a touch of relief,
yeah.
But not a lot. I've never experienced so many emotions over a weekend. You know, I never envisaged that I'd get promoted with my feet up, having a barbecue with a beer in my hand, drowning my sorrows. It's a crazy world we live in, you know, it's crazy.
2 days later, the FA rubber stamped the promotion, and at long last, everyone could relax and reflect on the fact that the impossible dream had, one way or another, been realised. The achievements of these amateurs had flown in the face of conventional wisdom. Wage bills and salaries were not the critical factor in the team's performance. Commitment, organisation, high standards of coaching and team spirit had won through. I caught up with James at the end of season awards reception taking place the following weekend.
You've had a few days since it was fully confirmed.
Yep.
But now that it's finally 100%, you have been promoted. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling sane.
Because I was feeling insane there for a fair few days. 87.3 points as an average over the last 3 years tells me that we deserve this. You know, the effort that some of these boys have put in for the whole 3 years, some just this season, myself and my staff for the whole 3 years, it's just desserts. And it's funny because I spoke a lot on Saturday in the team talk about fate, and the way I'd seen us going up was here with a packed stadium and us doing it, and we should have done it Saturday. Let's not dress it up. We should have done it Saturday. We had enough chances to do it. We restricted them to nothing. And it didn't work out for us on the day, which I guess is life in football. It's not just football, it's life. Sometimes things don't work out the way you plan them or the way they should.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, someone smiled on us and said, you know what, yeah, you do deserve it. And we're there.
That's what it feels like. It feels like it just deserves is the phrase you used. It feels like, you know, all right, it's not the conventional way of going up, but it's absolutely 100% deserved.
Yeah.
And after 3 years of toil and bad fortune in a lot of ways, you've got what you deserve.
Yeah, well, we always knew points per game could come into it.
Yeah.
We said it from the start of the season.
Because
you know,
it's not a fluky way of going up, is it?
Well, people are now going, oh, we didn't know about this. Listen, well, I did, so maybe they need to look at their secretary and look at their club and make sure they get the right information given to them, because every week we said it's about accumulating as many points as possible. And then ultimately, our points we've accumulated across the season have been enough for us to make sure that we are that club that got more than everyone else. And that is the bottom line. We got more than everyone else. We didn't get a here you go, you've done all right, and up. You got more than everybody else. You got to the final. You've done the job, so you get up. So we're there. We deserve it. It's a fresh new challenge. It's fantastic. You know, everyone's obviously buzzing on it. And we're excited to see what we can do, you know.
With the luck having finally gone their way, the first team players certainly enjoyed their end-of-season party. As I left, all were gathered around a projector screen, eagerly watching a video montage compiled by Matt Dilger, the video analyst we mentioned earlier. Matt had compiled every goal the team had scored in the season, and as the players watched, jokes flew around about fluky finishes and defenders delighting in their rare appearances. Matt himself had this to say about the palpable spirit among the squad.
There's no two ways about it. We're not going to roll over. We're not going to give up. We're going to keep fighting. There's an extremely talented group of players in there, and there's an extremely hard group of working staff behind them. And if we can do the fans and the club any justice, and the justice of the time and effort that we've put in, all for no financial reward, then we'll be there or thereabouts come the end of the season, whether that be that golden, magical third place on PPG or through the playoffs, like you say. I think no team's going to roll over, especially not us. Sometimes the luck doesn't go our way, but we're never going to roll over, we're never going to go away, and I think that's quite special about this group of players.
The awards were open to everyone, the club wishing to recognise the contributions of supporters as much as the players. Jack, Roger and others were in attendance as they witnessed a passionate farewell from a certain Mr. Jamie Byatt. The club's all-time appearance holder had decided he was going to leave his record tally at 355. And having scored in every season for the first team since arriving at the club, he marked his last appearance, appropriately enough, with a fifth goal in a 5-0 victory at Guernsey just before the playoffs. Crystallising his legend further, in his last reserve team appearance, Jamie scored from the penalty spot to deliver the winning goal in a cup final.
I've decided that I'm going to hang up my boots, but I'm still going to stay around and obviously be involved with James, hopefully, in the first team on the new role. But I'd just like to say thanks very much to this club. They've looked after me all of the years that I've been here. And I'd just like to say thanks very much to these boys getting promoted, because we've tried for 3 years to try and make it happen. And this year, we've made it happen, and there's no better way to hang my boots up. Yes, yes.
And so the summer allows me to reflect on this special season with a smile rather than sadness. In the 2018-19 season, free of the responsibility of documenting our surroundings, you could find me and the rest of the Broadway to Brazil team on a match day, draped in our scarves, supporting the Corinthian Casuals as our own team, maybe from behind the goal, perhaps among the Torcida. As I prepare to follow Jamie Byatt's footsteps and hang the mic up, I can reflect upon parallels with our own unpaid podcast team. unprecedented success yielded through dogged devotion to professional standards with no financial reward, surely an inspiration for our amateur team. This story is more than just sport. The Corinthy Casuals are a testament to the human spirit and the triumph of collective passion and commitment over individual vested interests. The last word goes to James Bracken.
This is about people, and when you see the reactions of people and the joy you can bring to them on a Saturday afternoon, that's worth more to me than any money. Success and the joy you can bring to people is what football is about, and it doesn't matter what level you go to, really. If you strip it all back and say, what is football about? It's about fans, it's about enjoyment, it's about that jubilation when you score a goal. That's football.
Yeah.
The money is just a byproduct of everything else.
Although we're not done just yet, in our next and final episode of Broadway to Brazil, we meet the Corinthian Casuals supporters who live halfway across the world as we explore just exactly what it is that connects Tolworth Broadway to Brazil.
And our team one day will be strong and big. We must put the name like this English team, Corinthian.
Yes.
And then, oh yeah, good idea, why not? But put no Corinthian, Corinthians with one S.
Yes.
And then we start the history of Corinthians in 1910.
And I always knew about, I always was aware about Corinthians Casuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wanted to come here and see a match. So today is like a dream coming true, you know?
We'll be tracing the full story of how, away from home, Corinthian FC played a significant historical role in the development and popularisation of football across the globe, and the link between the present-day non-league amateurs and one of the major club sides of South America, Brazil's Corinthians Paulista.
Corinthians now have 20 million fans, Corinthian Casuals 200. I mean, they've gone to complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
And we'll be talking to some of those individuals who have been lucky enough to replicate the exploits of their Victorian predecessors, touring Brazil under the Corinthian banner and being greeted as heroes by the locals in the process.
And I pushed your trolley through the arrival entrance of Sao Paulo Airport, and the thing opened. And there were television cameras and fans with scarves. And you were almost kind of looking around, well, who are these people at sea? And then all of a sudden you're getting interviewed. And
when you came off the plane and you met crowds at the airport, welcoming you and screaming in the airport and all that sort of thing, and throwing Jamie Byer up on their shoulders.
They had like three or four members of that 82 World Cup squad in their team. I mean, they scored three goals that the goalie never saw.
We'll see you there. Broadway to Brazil is presented and written by me, Yarick Zaba, with Dominic Bliss. Produced and edited by Brent Davies, with Tony Banks, our frontline reporter, in the field. Music is from John Forrest, Chris Kelly is web manager, and Kelly Bliss does our artwork. With huge thanks to everyone at Corinthian Casuals Football Club, to the Community Brain for use of the Museum of Futures, and to our sunshine, our only sunshine, Robin Hutchinson. Broadway to Brazil is a Creative Brain media production. Find us at broadwaytobrazil.com, where you can also find our Twitter and Facebook. For more Creative Brain media output, check out theus100.com. This episode is dedicated to the life of Terry Farnworth, the most northern of the northern casuals.
I've been about five times.
Been a few times,
yeah.
Terry.
Yeah.
From Carlisle, I've come from Carlisle.
What's your name, mate, sorry?
Terry.
From Carlisle
today.
You've come from Carlisle today?
Yeah.
How long does that take?
I don't know, 5:44 train this morning.
6:57
hours.
To come to a Bostwick South game.
Yeah.
It's been massive.
Distinct in history.
Yeah.
The second one that season best.